Well, it's a rare gift to be able to convey the joys, the sorrows, and the humor of everyday life in a way that makes you feel like you're listening to the story over a cup of coffee or maybe a beer with friends. And Wisconsin can be proud to claim a master storyteller like Michael Perry as one of our own. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Michael is an author, a humorist, musician, host of Tent Show Radio, and his most recent book is a novel. It's called The Jesus Cow. He's also the New York Times best-selling author of Visiting Tom, A Highwayman, and The Road to Roughneck Grace, Coop, and many more. He lives on a farm in rural Wisconsin with his wife and two daughters and joins us today from our WPR studios in Eau Claire. Michael Perry, thanks for spending time with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Larry. It's always great to be able to be on the radio just about 15 minutes away from my chicken coop.
Well, I'm really glad to have you on today to talk about your book. And as you listen in to Michael and I talk here, you may have some questions. Maybe you've already read his novel. I know we've gotten some Facebook comments already from people who have read the novel and really enjoyed it. Maybe you have a comment to him about that. Maybe you have some questions about the topic area. There's almost a religious vision that appears in the book, and we'll be talking about that with him as well. Anyway, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. This is your first novel for adults.
Yeah, I've never done this before. So just had carried this idea around with me for a long time and thought, well, if I can convince them to say yes. And then they did. And then, of course, then it's one thing to have what you think is a great idea. It's another thing to actually write it then.
Yeah, is it a lot different fiction writing from memoirs?
I think there are a few differences. The one thing I enjoy is just not having to fact check so much, being able to just have people say what I want them to say and not worry about getting the quote right. And then obviously a novel like this, it's a comic novel, so you can do a few things that are over the top and are clearly just for fun. On the other hand, one of the odd things that happens, I think, or counterintuitive maybe is a better word, people often ask me, because I write so much nonfiction, they wonder if people ever get upset about the things I write about them, and there have been some instances of that. But I find it much tougher when you write fiction, because at least when you write nonfiction, people know if you're writing about them or not.
Yeah.
When you write a novel and it's fiction and you're making things up, people refuse to believe it's not them. So, you know, say your mom calls in tears and says, why do you write these things about me? And you go, Mom, it's not you. And she says, oh, I know it is. And, thankfully, I haven't had that call yet. My mom is much more laid back. But yeah, when you write fiction, I think people project sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering about now your other nonfiction, your other fiction was The Scavengers, which was for young adults. Is there a lot of difference between the two, the type of the writing for the two different?
Not audiences? As much as you'd think, at least not in my case, because although I was that book. And by the way, I got the coolest email this morning for The Scavengers. I found out that just this week it's been featured all across the U.S. in the mini page, which was a little newspaper that I remember getting when I was a kid. It's almost the only thing that would be cooler is if I found out it was in the Weekly Reader. You know, you can have your Pulitzer Prizes, but if you get in the mini page, that's a big deal.
That is really cool.
If you're from Chippewa County, I'm happy about that. But anyway, I think with the Scavengers, not as much difference as you might think, because although it was written for an audience 8 to 12, or at least that's what it says on the book, as a parent who has consumed secondhand a lot of literature and film and music targeted at younger folks over the last 10 years, it always seems to me that the best stuff has the story, the characters, the topics of interest for the young set, but there's always something happening for the grown-up who might be listening or reading along. And so when I wrote The Scavengers, I actually I would write it with the 8 to 12 year old audience in mind, but then I'd also go through a second time and try to edit with an adult audience in mind. The difference would be, of course, some of the subject matter is a little,
yeah,
a little deeper, maybe. I always hesitate to refer to my own writing as deep. It may be deep in some metaphorical senses. I did, after all, grow up on a farm shoveling manure. So.
Well, I really enjoyed the Scavengers. You know, even though it wasn't
good, yeah,
for me, it was certainly. I was wondering about when that next version of that's coming out. But
I do owe them a sequel, yes. And I just got a tweet yesterday from a young reader asking me to get with the program and get the sequel done. So hopefully in 2016.
All right, so it's going to happen sooner or later.
It better. I signed a contract. So.
All right. Well, you know, even though this is fiction, there are a lot of familiar elements from, I think, from your real life writings in this book.
Sure, you always draw, I think, on things that are familiar and then build the story around that. I always joke that I was a bachelor for 39 years. I come from New Auburn, Wisconsin, wrote a book called Population 485. And so given the opportunity to write fiction and create any sort of character I wanted, I wrote about a longtime bachelor from a small town in northern Wisconsin. But yeah, there are little things woven in. I mean, there are issues of faith that are woven in that, yep, speak to my own past. There are things about cows. I love cows. I was raised with Holsteins, and I wanted to write about cows, so there's that sort of thing in. And I even managed to get the local volunteer fire department involved as part of the plot, which was great fun, and that, too, draws on my real-life experience. But beyond that, you definitely then, you take those basic bits of information and experience and extrapolate and embellish, see where it takes you.
Well, it took you some pretty good places. Elaine sent a note on Facebook and said, I really like the book. It's filled with gentle humor.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, writing, obviously the title, The Jesus Cow, gets attention for more, yeah, than one reason. And
yeah,
writing anything about faith and questioning faith, and there's both of those things are in here. Yes, of course, you... I will admit I was a little nervous about it, but I do reserve the right to find humor in all things, including religion, and I have my own background in that regard. But it was important to me to try and be somewhat nuanced about it. And, for instance, one of my favorite characters in the book is a very devout Catholic widow who goes to church several times a week and lights a candle in memory of her deceased husband, and then engages in a devotional every day. And that's based on a couple of very devout Catholic folks in my life who just have set wonderful examples for me and my child. That doesn't mean that I necessarily understand the superstructure of that faith, but I understand their acts. And so, yeah, you want to have humor, and it also, one of the people who helped me with the book was my next-door neighbor, Ginny, who's a very devout Catholic widow.
Ah.
And I had her fact-check the passages that I wrote. And she was very helpful. She saved me from myself in one very specific regard. I had a scene where this woman had gone into the Catholic church and lit a candle and did her devotional and came back out in under 10 minutes. And I wrote that she had completed the Stations of the Cross. And if we could hear your audience right now, you would hear all of the Catholics going, oh, no, that's not happening. And Ginny was great. She said, yeah, she said, you're not going to finish the Stations of the Cross in under 10 minutes. And so she helped me. We put something else in there that was a little more doable.
Yeah, even if you had an auctioneer's voice, you wouldn't get it.
That's what I'm told.
Oh, man. Yeah. Michael Perry, our guest today, talking with him about his new book. It's titled The Jesus Cow, a novel, and certainly inviting you to join in with your own questions or comments. Have you read the book, or do you have questions about Michael's writing or his other books? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't sure I was going to like your book.
You and me both, pal.
I was thinking, oh, okay, I know exactly how this is going to go. And in the end, I sat back and thought, what a dummy you were. I mean, yeah, of course you were going to like it. The the characters, first place, it's funny. There's some really, there is some wonderful humor in it, but I really like the characters. And your main character, Harley, and he does seem a lot like you, who's careful to say he's not a real farmer.
Yeah. He does share that with me. Yeah.
Oh, man. I thought your character, I really got to like all your characters.
Well,
even the odd duck guy that.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's a good opportunity to talk a little bit about fiction and being humble when you're working outside of your genre. And there are two characters in the book that could broadly be cast as villains is too strong a word, but there's the developer Clute Sorensen, and then there's this Carolyn Sawchuk, she's not villainous as much as she's problematic.
Yeah,
and when I first wrote those characters, Carolyn in particular, I had this whole sketch about who she was, and she's a disgraced academic, and she's trying, I say, to enculturate the people of this small town. And I think the line I used is she considered herself a woman of the people having never been consulted. And I sent an early draft of her to a friend who's a novelist, a guy named Dean Bacopoulos, who has a novel coming out in a matter of weeks called Summerlong. And he wrote back, and it was so helpful because he said, you know, this is funny, it's entertaining, I see what you're doing, but you have made her into such an unlikable caricature that people won't care about her. And tell me more about, you know, work into the story, who she started out to be and what her dreams were and why she began as a poet and wound up embittered. And boy, that really helped. Because if you read the book now, you know, I don't know if redemption is the right word, but there's certainly the character becomes more complicated in a positive way, and even Clute, the developer. So I'm very grateful to Dean and to other writers outside of the genre who've taken time to help me.
Yeah, I can tell you took that advice to heart.
Yeah, he was absolutely right. Like I went for all laughs, and it actually came off sounding a little mean, even though it's fiction. I mean, the book itself is it's a comic novel. Obviously, there are things in here that are over the top. You know, we've focused a little bit on all the things that are based in real life, but it's over the top and it's silly and it's fun. But the concept itself is completely drawn from real life. The idea that this bachelor farmer goes out on Christmas Eve and his calf is standing there and it appears to have the image of Christ on the side of it. It's a Holstein and the spots can be construed to be the face of Christ. Well, that's actually a very common occurrence. It's a phenomenon called pareidolia, and I may not be pronouncing it correctly. I know how to spell it, and I know what it means, but I don't have opportunity to use it in conversation a lot. But pareidolia is just the human neuropsychological ability to look at a conglomeration of spots or images or fragments and pull together something recognizable. And so, once a week or once a month, flying around the internet is a picture of a grilled cheese sandwich where someone sees the image of Christ, or someone sees a wet spot on a wall and they think they can see the Virgin Mary. One of the seeds for this book happened many, many years ago. I used to spend time writing in a coffee shop in Nashville, Tennessee, and the coffee shop was called Bongo Java. And in a display case there, a little shrine beneath glass and under lights, they had a cinnamon bun that was said to resemble the image of Mother Teresa. And indeed, it did look like Mother Teresa, although, as I always say, it always helped if you knew ahead of time it was supposed to look like Mother Teresa. But they called it the nun bun, and it became very, very popular and was in the news all over the country, and they sold nun bun T-shirts and nun bun coffee cups. And then one night in 2005, someone broke in and stole it, and no one really knows what happened. It was rumored to have resurfaced in Seattle, but those of us who follow the subject, I believe that one might be a fake. But the point is, the concept of the book is actually fairly realistic. These things happen. And there's a very rich history in Wisconsin of people seeing images and people flocking to see them. And I snuck a little bit of that into the book.
Some of that's in the book, yeah, absolutely. Michael Perry, our guest today, having some fun talking with him about his latest book. It's the title, The Jesus Cow. I'm Larry Mueller. Hope you'll join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hope you'll stay tuned because coming up at 11:45, we'll talk with another Wisconsin author about her novel, actually first novel for her. It's called Death by Roses, and it's a fun and thought-provoking read as well, as is Michael Perry's new book called The Jesus Cow. Join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. We had Rebecca and Eau Claire. Says, my 6 and 9-year-old boys loved Scavengers. We've read it twice together, and my oldest is on his third round.
Jeepers.
Whoa. Yeah, we've never laughed so much together while reading a book.
Oh, that does my heart good.
Yeah, we said we love Spoonerisms, so keep them coming.
I'm glad, because the Spoonerisms, I almost took them out of the Scavengers, because I thought, you know what, critics are going to say it's too hard to get through. And indeed, there have been a few critics who have said that there was too much of that, but I've had correspondence with the under 15-year-old crowd, and they seem to be all for it.
So thank you
for that. That's very kind.
Did you have your this is a total aside from the other book. Did you have your daughters read that book?
Nope. I don't really. I treat my work like any work. You know, I don't expect my kids to have to participate any more than if I was a lawyer. That said, yes, I did read passages just to see if they found the character believable or relatable. And also, I did test a few of the humor passages to see if I could get laughs out of, at that time, a 6-year-old and a 13-year-old. And when it seemed to work, then I used that. I will say my youngest actually enjoys listening to it on, I'll come in the house and find her listening to it on audiobook format, which part of the reason she probably enjoys that, it was read by an actor, a woman out of New York City, so it's not like Dad reading at her.
I was going to say just the opposite. Maybe she wants to hear Dad, but no, that's right.
We do read every night, though. Yeah, that's a real truth. I mean, part of that book that's drawn from real life is when she sits down with her mother to read, and that's one of my fondest memories, and I love to read with my kids, and my wife is very good about reading with them when I'm gone.
Yeah. Well, we have callers online. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments today. And just before we take a call, one other question. Do you think it's hard to move into a small town? I want to go back to that character that you liked. Do you think it's hard to move into a small town and feel part of the community?
In many cases, absolutely. I think it can be because, you know, I wrote, it's been over 12 years, I think, since I published Population 485, which is an old, you know, it's that Can You Go Home Again book. It's about going back to my hometown. And I receive so many emails and letters even now from people saying they read it and they liked it, and so they're going to move to a small town. And I always feel like I have to semi-congratulate them and semi-warn them. Obviously, it depends on the place and the circumstance. But yes, we can be very – it's not even so much that small towns can be exclusionary. It's that they can be reserved. And it's hard. The only advice I've ever given people – on going to a small town is don't try to join, just hang out, get a sense for the place, and then slowly, eventually, you work your way in.
I think
you really shouldn't be taking advice from me.
But I really think that's good advice.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, even in my case, I went back, I knew the place, but it had been 12 years, and I'd just go to the cafe in the morning and sit in the corner and listen and try to get a feel for things, and joined the fire department and sat in the back row at the meetings. And
Yeah. Well, Peterson and Racine has a comment for us, so let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, I'm a farm wife and have been, but now I'm elderly. But I just wanted to comment. We had a herd of 100 Holsteins, and they were quite a lot of work. And my only way to help really was to pray. So seeing a Jesus cow would certainly be something that I would do. I would see Jesus in the hide of a cow real easily. And my priest said that he didn't doubt that a bit. Unfortunately, I sometimes would pray over a certain cow because my husband would report at breakfast time that the cow was sick and she had to be separated from the herd more or less because she needed assistance. We needed to get the vet, I suppose. So I took it upon myself. Now, the farm where the cows were housed was different from the one where we lived. The one where we lived, we had pigs. So I was associated more with the pigs than I was with the cattle. But I took it upon myself to go to where the cows were and pray over that cow and entreat the Blessed Virgin to please help the cow to get well again. Well, at noon when my husband came home for lunch, he said, "Oh, you did your mission?" "Yeah." He said, "Well, where were you praying?" I said, "In the barn, by the pen where you keep the sick animals." He said, "She's not there. She's outside." "Well," I said, "I think God, in all his graciousness, will know how to transfer those prayers. Don't worry, the cow will get better."
I think in that case you would hope for spiritual call forwarding is what you would get there.
Oh, but that's
wonderful.
I love the
pig references too, because I refer to myself in my bio as an intermittent pig farmer. I like raising pigs when I can.
Oh yeah, and cows. As you were talking about milking those cows, I was flashing back to my own youth. We had about 70 cows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you don't.
Every one of those cows.
Yeah. And then when the power went out, you did it the old-fashioned way.
Oh, ouch. And there was the kicker, and there was the one that swatted you with her tail. And yeah.
This caller reminded me, though, that we do, again, talk about reality, that we had different cows that were named for things we could see in their patches. We had a cow named Trigger because she had a white formation on the front of her. On her forehead that looked just like the trigger of a gun. And so,
yeah.
It's kind of like looking at spotted Holsteins, kind of like looking at the clouds and finding dragons and stuff. You see what you can see in the spots.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Bob in West Dallas will give you a chance. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Mike. This is Bob. We've met, and I wondered if you ever remember hearing the old poem from Charlie Vincent about the Halloween night in New Auburn.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's a legendary poem about some young ruffians going out and committing organic vandalism using a manure spreader.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
We've met at various doings up there, but I just wanted to call and see if you remember that one.
Yeah, I have a copy of that poem in my archive somewhere.
Oh, my gosh, Halloween and a manure spreader?
Yeah. And whenever I refer to my archives, by the way, if my wife is listening, she rolls her eyes, and because what she knows it is we're talking about a bunch of cardboard boxes out in a pole barn.
Bob, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can join in the conversation. We have lots of things that we can actually talk about relating to the book. One of the things that I kind of was interested in, because I teach in a communications department, and I don't teach marketing myself, but we have other people who teach marketing in my department at Life Sciences Communication here at UW. There's a marketing firm that gets involved in this in this whole, and the process of that was kind of fun, and I was thinking, you know, that you must have talked with some marketing people about how that whole process works.
Well, I'm kind of used to that because I self-published my first four books, and we have kind of, not kind of, that's a bad choice of words. We have a self-supporting small family business, and my wife is involved in all the things she does to keep things going, and I go on the road. I just got back from a big stretch of book tour out to the West Coast, and coming down to Madison this week for at the library, and going over to Oconomowoc on Thursday, and so marketing is part of it, and yeah, you're always trying to. I don't. There's no getting around the fact you're trying to get eyeballs.
Yeah.
It's one thing to write it. It's another to get eyeballs and to get people to look at it in whatever format. And so we do everything from, you know, I have a mailing list sign up at every speaking event I do, and we send out emails, and I do Facebook, and I do Twitter, and I have sneezingcow.com is my website. And so marketing is part of it, and it's become harder and harder because media is so fragmented now. I used to go on book tour, and even with my first book, and go to Seattle, and you'd do several TV interviews and a couple of newspaper interviews, and now it's much more fragmented. You're trying to get on a blog somewhere, or you're hoping that the local weekly is still going, and so yeah, marketing's part of it. It's but at the end of the day, if you don't sit down and do the writing, you don't have anything to market.
So. Yeah, you got to be doing it. You got to definitely be doing that for sure.
I have to say too, this just occurred to me. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, after all this cow talk, that there's a man named Dan Schaefer, who's professor and chair of animal sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
I know him well.
Well, you be sure and tell him thank you, because there are some things in here about what happens to this calf over time. And I needed an expert. I'm a farm kid, but it's been a while. So I asked him a few questions on calf development and size and that sort of thing, and he was able to help me so that I was, even though it's fiction, you want to try for a certain amount of veracity, and he was of great help to me. There's one scene at the end where the calf kneels down to nurse, and Dan told me that that probably wasn't realistic, but I told him that I was going to use poetic license. he was just a great help. But I also, that's also what I love about writing books, whether fiction or nonfiction, is the folks you end up having these little chats with. And I owe Dan a signed book. I've just been off on book tour and haven't sent it to him yet.
But, he's a very good guy.
Well, he was very helpful to me. And don't blame him for any calf facts that are clearly fictitious.
Well, let's turn to Dave in Dave in Augusta. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Hey, hello, Larry. Hello, Michael.
Howdy, Dave. Right down the road.
Howdy, howdy. Yeah, neighbor. Yeah, you bet. We've got an old farm built in the 1850s, and we bought it from the family. It was in the same family for all those years until the last surviving member of that family just couldn't keep it up anymore. So we bought it, and we got a phone call last week from her granddaughter saying that the grandmother would like to come out and visit the farm one last time. She's moving to Bloomer, and we've had her out there before, and she walks around and she's crying, looking at the buildings, looking at the fields, looking at the hay mow, the house, the whole thing, and just remembering what happened in her lifetime at that farm. And I'm wondering, Michael, have you ever experienced that? I think I know where you live, but anyway, it's an older place, but have you ever had the people, generations from before, come back to visit the farm, Michael?
You bet. As a matter of fact, I'll go the other way. I completely understand the sentimental part, and I have the same thing when I go back to visit my folks' farm. But I'll go the other way. We have our farm, the one we live on now, is extremely rocky and a lot of sandstone right underneath the dirt, and the young man who grew up there is now retired, and he comes out turkey hunting once in a while. And so I took him one day on a little tour and just said, just show me where the barn used to be and this and that. And it was fascinating and wonderful. And he, too, got somewhat sentimental. But he also, he pointed to the fence line, and he said, you know all the fence posts on this farm? And it was originally a 200-acre farm. We just have 37 acres of it, but I said, yeah. He goes, I dug every one of those fence posts, and it was rock all the way. And so I got a kick out of that, because he leavened the sentimentality with the fact that he also remembered that not everything was peaches and cream. But yes, we have. And I also, although the now grandmother, who was the last to actually farm our farm has not been to the farm. I have gone into town and visited with her and had her retell some of the stories and history of the place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. That's cool. I got to share something real quick with you. About 4 years ago, we got a call from our neighbors. We were on the road, and they said, you know, Dave and Carrie, there's about 40 people lined up in front of your farmhouse. I said, right now? They said, yeah. Well, we found out it was a impromptu reunion, and they had gathered everybody from different states, and they thought that they just come and surprise us. Well, they did, because we weren't home. But they all lined up in front of our grand old brick four square, and they took a series of photos, which was fine. So.
That's neat. You bet.
Pretty neat. Thanks, Dave. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. Well, I'm going to go back to that marketing for just a minute, because that marketing firm, you know, I thought when I started that marketing firm, I started reading about it, that there was going to be shenanigans there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got off on a whole tangent about me, because that's what I do, is get off on tangents about me. But about BookTube, you're talking about marketing of the actual Jesus cow in the book.
Yeah.
So Harley, obviously, in the beginning, when he sees what he's got, this calf with the image of Christ on the side, the first thing he does is call his friend Billy, because he doesn't know what to do. And his friend Billy takes one look at the calf and says, "Get a lawyer and start printing T-shirts." but Harley was raised by a very devout mother who, her whole thing was, and I think there are a lot of listeners will recognize this phrase, let's not make a scene.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so at first he just decides, you know, he has this quiet, simple life he's happy with. The last thing he wants is a lot of attention. And so he tries to hide the calf, keep it under a bushel, as it were. And sure enough, something happens where the calf gets out and things spiral out of control. And he's faced with a decision, either just get rid of the calf, or because this developer is threatening to take away his farm and he doesn't have the resources to fight him, he can go the other way and just decide to make as much money as he possibly can. And there's one false start. He has the local fire department try to do a fundraiser. And I loved writing that section, because that was... Yeah, that's just like the chief shows up and he's trying out all his new toys. And they say, well, you know, we run the softball tournament in the beer tent. How hard could this be? And and as you know, if you've read it, things come off the rails pretty rapidly. But somewhere in here, an agent from L.A. shows up. And when he first sees the agent is standing in a nurse spreader. And Harley says, you realize where you're standing? And the guy goes, look, I'm an agent. I don't mind a little cum on my boots. So... But at some point, Harley decides, okay, I'm going to go all in. And they decide just to market the heck out of this thing and make as much money as they can and sell merchandise and give tours. And even at one point, they rent the calf out. It makes public appearances at Walmarts and things like that. So, I think that partly was, for one thing, it was just fun to, as I said, with fiction, it's fun just to create a situation and see what happens.
Yeah.
But it also was an exploration of how one thing we're pretty good at in this country is we find a way to market everything. I always said, you know, when you can go into Farm and Fleet and buy yourself a yoga mat, you know that there's marketing is a powerful thing, man. And so, yeah, it was fun just to see all the directions they could take the marketing in, even right down to cow genetics and frozen ovum.
It was absolutely amazing. I was thinking about it. A movie, Show Me the Money was the term. Show Me the Money.
The Tom Cruise movie, Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire. I thought of that a little bit. You know, all the lawyers and this firm, I thought, oh, he's going to get... I don't want to go too far with it, but
we don't want to get into spoiler territory.
I don't want to get into spoiler territory, but it's I tell you that interesting that whole aspect and whether or not the marketing firm is good for him or not good for him. That was something that was intriguing me as I was reading along. I've been wondering which way that was gonna turn.
Yeah, well, it turns.
Definitely turns. Oh man, there's no doubt about that. So you're done with your book tour now? How's it selling?
Well, it never really stops, but the the official book tour, and when I say official, what I'm referring to is the parts of the tour where the publisher is actually sending me out. The bulk of that has just wrapped up. I just got back. I did a bunch of stuff in the Midwest, and then I was out on the West Coast going up and down, started down in San Diego and got up through San Francisco and Seattle and Portland and then back to Chicago and worked my way back toward home. And then I have about four or five still official book tour events. As I said, one in Madison on Wednesday night.
Where is that in Madison?
At the public library. The best thing to do is just go to sneezingcow.com. At this point, coming off I'm just 48 hours removed from a three-week book tour. I don't even know how to find my own house. So you're best to go to sneezingcow.com and just check the events page, and we have all that stuff written down. And then I'm going to Oconomowoc on Thursday. I love going to Oconomowoc because when the people in New York set up the book tour, they always call and they say, well, you're going to Madison and Milwaukee and then Oconomowoc. And I say, oh, that would be Oconomowoc. And then there are a couple of more events the following week as well, down at Boswell's Books down in the Milwaukee area and Marshfield. But if I start listing them, I'm going to mess them up. So just go to sneezingcow.com and look at the events page. Yeah.
Has this been a good tour for you? I mean,
it's book tour is good in that on the one hand, it's... I don't know if I need any validation, but on the one hand, like I was down in Madison actually a few days ago, and to have hundreds of people show up and people standing, and it's just overwhelming, and you're so grateful. And then you go to La Jolla, California, and let's just say the gathering out there is more intimate. And I'll say it's, on the one hand, you're glad you're there because you're one by one, literally, are meeting new readers and they will tell someone else and they'll tell someone else in turn. But it's also a really timely ego adjustment. And, you know, it's
a good reminder.
Oh, yeah. And that's just fine. A guy, that doesn't hurt a guy any. But no, book tour is look, I say it every time. I never set out to do any of this. I never had any clue that I'd become a writer, let alone a writer who would sell some books. And, yeah, this one seems to be... My books never make huge splashes. They just quietly find their audience. It seems to be doing okay. It was number four on the Midwest Indie list, which is great.
Yeah.
It was moving up the national indie list. You know, where that'll happen, where that will end, I don't know. But, honestly, my books tend to... live long, quiet lives rather than big, splashy, quick lives, and I'll take that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not opposed to storming the New York Times charts.
Well, you've got...
In the meantime, I'm just keep writing and talking.
Well, keep writing, that's for sure. You've got a wonderful book here, Michael. Thank you so much for talking with us about it today.
Thanks for having me on once again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. He's a good guy, I can tell you that for sure. Michael Perry, and he's a wonderful writer, too. His book, The Jesus Cow, go to sneezingcow.com and find out when he's going to be in your area. Take a look at the book. I really enjoyed it. I love the characters. I was one of those books where you feel bad when, you know, it's over. You thought, oh, I like those characters. Where are they? Where'd they go? I want some more. And speaking of some more, we've got another author coming up next who's got just a fascinating story to tell. In addition to the book is a fascinating book for sure. And the story around the book is also fascinating. Vivian Probst, Ruth Probst, our guest coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.